celebrating success, learning from legends, and growing poppies. This is Tall Poppy Talk with Grace Lewis.
Kia ora and welcome to Tall Poppy Talk. Today we have Georgia Padden. She is the director and designer, the founder and CEO of Board George, a sunglasses brand redefining eyewear through high quality design, originality, and a very bold approach to self-expression. We'll check some of the details of the facts, but I believe in 2019 was when she launched and has since exponentially grown with her designs now stocked in, when I did this intro, 90 retailers across New Zealand and Australia. We'll see where that is now. But self-expression is a big topic for today, and I'm so excited to talk both about the origin of Board George and the continuation of how Georgia herself expresses herself as a leader and also a creative through all this growth. She is a fellow podcaster and hosting the Board to Boss podcast with ZM and iHeartRadio, utilizing that great platform to connect with entrepreneurs and business owners to feel less alone in their journeys. And it's just a good listener for those of us who aren't entrepreneurs. To round out the bio on Georgia, it is necessary to add that she's by all accounts a really great friend, an inspiring fashion icon, a motivator and a connector. So it's a real gift, Georgia. I know in the hectic lead up to Christmas to be able to have you on Tall Poppy Talk. My first question is, where and how are you today?
Well, start with how are you? That was insane. That was quite the intro. I don't think I've ever sat through something like that.
Well,
your writing is pretty impressive. Thank you. I'm sitting here in the office today. We are full, what is the saying? Speed ahead with like coming into Christmas. We're doing seconds and sample sales at the moment just to get rid of some of that stock, but honestly ready for a break.
And when does the break actually come? Because I feel like that's kind of like this. You've said that. I'm like, I'm curious when that happens.
No, you're so right. I say break. I'm hoping to finish work this Friday, or at least get all orders out by this Friday. And then I actually hope to not come back to the office till probably the 27th of December, which is like 4 or 5 days, I think. And then we're working one day, and then I actually want to try take it off till maybe the 5th of Jan. We've got some of our staff who are happy to work in the office. So this is the first year I might actually get like a proper break, which is really nice.
Nice, but also like you can hear it in the voice too. There's like, it's uncomfortable, it feels like, to take that break, but you have trust in who is there.
Look, I say break, I mean break from the office. I'm still going to be working because it doesn't stop. Like everybody understands if you're a business owner, like you're constantly on your phone, your emails, your messages. And because if I don't work, nothing comes through in the website because nobody's posting, nobody's doing that stuff. So I say not working, but like I'm just going to be doing the easier stuff.
Yeah, no, I love that. And there is so much content, especially with the Board to Boss podcast, about the business, which is so cool. And as much as I want to dive into that, that's kind of that you've got that covered in your own podcast. And for this, it's more about you and this origin story, but also how you've evolved. Because even me with my podcast is when you put yourself out there, it's open to be received however. And sometimes there's really great responses, sometimes there's not. But before we get into all of that stuff, the one question I did have with your business is, mm-hmm. In the process of naming your business, how did you land there? And did you ever grapple with like, I want to change it?
Honestly, from memory, I think I knew what the name was going to be straight away. So if you haven't listened to the podcast or know our origin story, basically I left on my OE when I was about 18 or 19 and went traveling around Europe, lived in London, and I wanted a way to keep my family and friends up to date with like all of my antics and my adventures. And so that led me to starting a travel blog called Not So Bored George. So that was just always like in the sphere. And then when I wanted to start this business, or at the time it wasn't a business, it was just like a thing, I still loved the name, but I was really, really bored in my monotonous job. So it just made sense to take the Not So off and keep Bored George. I actually remember sending the concepts. I like designed the logo. I designed it on Word, like Microsoft Word. And I remember Snapchatting the designs to like my three best friends and being like, guys, how does this sound? How does this look? And I've never really questioned it. It's just been that. That's what it's been. And it's kind of stuck.
That is so cool to hear. It's like when people talk about love and they say, when you know, they're the one.
Yeah.
That was you with Board George.
Yeah. Incredible. It just kind of became a personality.
Yeah, and that is a big part of it, right? Its own personality, which is in tandem part of your personality. And then as you scale up that business, I've really enjoyed following, as you've said, like, it's been a big year, it's been a hard year. And shout out to Devin Eastwood, because we had similar conversations, right? She's just, you got to go listen to that one, people. But as you scale up and that business identity, there's also your own emotional identity. So when Bored George went from a thing, as you call it, like this thing, to now, you can't really even take a proper break from it because it is so, you are the fuel driver of it. I guess, and I know it's like a really big, hard question, what are some of the emotions and thoughts and feelings you have about the growth and the journey you've been on?
Yeah, it is a big question. Let's see. I think I couldn't have imagined my like 20s any other way, I don't think. Like, for one, I don't think I would ever work for anybody else again. I think while I was probably a really good employee, I was probably a really annoying employee because I always just wanted to take the business to the next step. And I was like, what can we do to make it better? So I think it always just made sense to be doing that for myself and growing the business. I think one thing that's really tripped me up along the way is having the business so intertwined with me as a person. Like, people see me in the street and they say, like, there's Bored George. Like, it's me. There's no separation between the two. And I think the more I get on in my business, the more I think I literally am my company. And there's good and bad things to that. And I'm just trying to work out where I sit and how I feel about that for the future.
Wow, that's a great answer. Thank you, too. And I, before we started recording, forget her name. Was it Molly or Holly?
Yeah, Molly.
Molly. She's in the background doing her thing. Your team, how many people are on the Bored George team now?
So changes depending on how busy we are. We have three contractors, so they just do part-time in and out. That might be PR, marketing, emails, Facebook meta ad buying. And then we usually have one girl in the office at the time. We've had a couple sometimes, but at the moment we just have Molly to work with us over the summer, help out with packing. But there's a lot of changes happening this month, and I'm sure we'll be seeing a lot of changes next month as well as we try to figure out where we want to go into 2025.
Yeah, it's always evolving. And thank you for answering that, because as you had talked about, like, your identity being so intertwined with Bored George, it's also when you build the team with Bored George, those inevitably are going to be big players in your life too. Like, I think it's always important, whether you're an entrepreneur or not, who you surround yourself with, whether that's in the office or on the work site. You are going to go home and have stories about them or have feelings and just experiences with them. So for you, building a team, whether that's the contractors or someone in the store, is probably even more important than the I don't even know the word non-entrepreneur, because you are so intertwined with the business.
100%. Everybody's so close-knit and everybody has such a big part to play in such a small business. And I think that's the difference, is when you have a small team, everybody's jobs are way more dedicated and they play bigger parts, I guess.
They do. And part diving, there's so many other questions. I know I'm all over the place on this, but the one that I'm like, let's get straight into it so we can, I just am curious your thoughts. Tall Poppy Syndrome is what has really motivated me in this podcast of talking to tall poppies, which is you, people who have carved a path and are quote unquote successful and growing above. As mentioned in the beginning, that opens you up to a lot of joyful times and new opportunities, but it does in the parallel open you up to feedback and critique and some chopping down. So, without leading the witness too much, which I kind of have, is when we think about tall poppy syndrome, and you can keep this as surface or serious as you want, because I know it can be heavy, so you can do whatever you want there. But could you please describe like your definition of tall poppy syndrome and then how you've experienced it?
Yeah. Oh, I don't know how to like describe it specifically, but to me, I would say tall poppy syndrome is when somebody looks at someone who's successful or maybe gaining success or, you know, going down their own path and leading the way or doing something that's a little bit different, rather than looking at that person and wanting to cheer them on or congratulate them, it's more like, maybe a little bit of jealousy, and I've got to cut them down a little bit. Like, I've just got to get them back down to where they belong. And it's so common in New Zealand. So common.
Has it been like you went over to England, like you did that part first?
Mm-hmm.
Did you find it was present when you were there as well, or not so much?
It's hard to say because I was in no way successful over there. I was just riding the wave, as you do when you live overseas. I do find, and I do remember, there being an absolute stark difference in the way that you get treated over there, about your appearance, about your successes. I remember being able to wear anything I wanted down the street and nobody would even take a second look. In fact, you'd probably go see your girls and then they'd be like, sweet, we're wearing denim jackets, denim tops and denim pants today. That cool, let's join in. Like, there's just a completely different mindset over there than here. And yeah, even it's quite judgmental over here, really.
And too, in your position as an entrepreneur, founder, director, everything to do with that, that's like a separate part. And we talked about identity there. So it's not just like Georgia, you, it's the board George, Georgia. And so you're getting a little bit of that double experience from the business side, as well as just, well, anyone should go check out your Instagram. I find it really cool, all your vlogs and the fashion and all that sort of stuff. But do you find it's been a little bit more tough from the business side of chopping down, or that personal side?
I must say I hadn't really experienced it for the first couple of years. Probably up until this year, really, actually, I've had really good experiences with going out and doing a lot. I mean, this is the first year I really had a personal brand. Like, I started my personal brand Instagram in May, I think, or March.
That's nice.
So yeah, like really, really late. And through that, I've had way more offers to go and speak at universities or for Auckland Business Chamber or all sorts of different, you know, just opportunities coming my way. And this is the first year that I've experienced quite a bit of that chopping down. And yeah, it's been tough. It's been a real weird year to navigate.
No, and thank you for talking about it so honestly, because I think a lot of listeners will hear this and not that they'll find comfort in it, but that is sort of the word to describe, because you look at others and just assume life's great, they're happy, they're off traveling, engaged, they're business people, and it's like, no, there's still that presence. And as much as there is really positive stuff, that percentage of negative gets to us. I'm trying to preach about celebrating other people's success, and I still experience that often because it's our natural instinct to think about where's the negative, what's gone wrong. And when you are someone like yourself who's constantly evolving and improving, you're going to pay more attention to the negative because it seems like an opportunity of improvement, regardless of if it's right, because other people's opinions are their opinions, and so we have to filter them out. But I did want to ask, because I find it interesting from the business side too. You said in May was when you decided to really commit and let's do the personal brand. Can you talk me through some of that decision-making process?
Yep. So before that, I've been working with a PR agent for the business for probably a year before that. And we started to get quite a lot of articles and quite a lot of interviews of people wanting to interview me for my business story rather than just getting Board George clippings of Sunny's for in the magazines. So that was when Tess, my PR agent, said, why don't you just give it a go and start a personal brand, and that way we can kind of go for that side of PR as well, really sell you as like a business owner and like in the fashion world. And yeah, it just started there. I started off by doing my daily outfits. I think I did it every day for a month, and then some daily vlogs, and I think we got up to like, I don't know, 5,000 followers. Yeah, in like the first 5 months, which was pretty good.
That's really good. And there was an article I read recently. I'll check my notes. Yeah, okay. It was with Fashion NZ. That was pretty easy. And in there, I pulled a quote that I loved, which was, you said, in a way, my naivety may have been an advantage. So regarding building the business, and I'm sure with the personal brand too, even though you had a lot more business acumen by the time you gone to build the personal brand. But can you like speak more to what that naivety was and how you think it was an advantage?
Yeah, so I think a lot of entrepreneurs and business people have the same mentality when they get asked, were they educated or did they go to university? Did they know what they were getting themselves into? Quite a lot of the time, everybody says that their naivety is like it was a positive, because if we knew how hard it was going to be or how much we were going to have to give up or how much money we were going to have to put into it, we would never do it in the first place, right? If we knew that we were going to get a little bit of hate or there would be a lot of competition or all that sort of stuff, again, we probably wouldn't, you know, lean towards doing it. So I think with everything I do, I've come into it absolutely blind. I still feel like that half the time, and it still probably works to my advantage.
It does, because like I'm going to think of it from an athletic point of view for a moment, because rowing was my sport. And
really?
Yeah, and people will watch it and a lot of people will say, oh, I didn't even know that they had shoes in the boat, because that's how unaware people are, which is totally cool. If you're not a rower, why would you know that? But to the point is, when you're watching a sport like that, I went watching some racing this past weekend with my mum, and she's been around rowing, and the thing she was noticing with the technique was like good, but when you're someone like me who knows more, then you know, you notice more, right? So to that point of naivety, when I first started rowing, I didn't know all the details and the measurements and the shoes were in the boat and all these little details. But the more you know, the more you realize you don't know. And then the more you realize there is to improve. And there's like 10 different ways that you could look at or improve a certain technique within the sport. So I can only imagine in business, when you are an entrepreneur, there's rule books, sure, or there's like guidebooks, but no one's done what you've done. So unlike with rowing, where you can look at the quote unquote perfect technique and try to replicate it, you're replicating nothing. You're paving it as you go, which to me is just so crazy. So pause to kudos and celebrate you there. But to that point of naivety, the more you know, the more you realize you don't know.
Yeah. Which and the more I want to learn.
Okay, good. So you still have like that. What's the word? Someone said to me once, it's like relentlessly curious. So you're like not just curious, it's just like you're relentless about it. Is that describe you?
Yeah, I think like I said, like everything's just new, and everything, I say I'm winging it in quotation marks, but I'm getting to the point where like the money's too big, the product's too much, like where I'm like, oh, I don't know if I can quite wing it anymore. So yeah, I am letting that curiosity feed me into more education. So I'm doing more courses and I'm listening to more podcasts and I'm doing things that hopefully will make me feel a little bit more comfortable with my decisions. Usually I'm just like, I'll tick it off, let's do it, let's see what happens, and hope for the best. But yeah, I've actually just started a new course to teach myself more about finances and ordering and ad spend. It's just continuously upskilling to make sure I'm not kind of leading the business down a grey path.
Yeah, and then you look back at things you did in 2019 when you launched, and you think, this is not me projecting, but you think, if I'd known what I know now, the decisions I would have made. But then you also look back and be like, good on you for doing that or asking those retailers or vendors. And now you think, oh gosh, I had such balls. That's a terrible phrase. Like, I had such confidence to do that, but you just didn't know that you should be nervous.
I was telling someone the other day, they made a comment about our sunglasses pouches, and she made a little joke as if, she was like, oh, do you sew these? Like, as in sew the little soft pouches. And I laughed and I was like, no, like, that's impossible. And then I had to snap, like, my head and be like, I actually did. Like, for the first whole year of my business, I drove to Spotlight and I bought material and I took it back to my parents and I sewed like hundreds of sunglasses cases out of Spotlight material. So, I mean, even that sort of stuff, I just forget that I did. And I would have spent so much money and time trying to save money by making stuff. Like, all that sort of stuff I look back on now and I was just like, I wish I had some of that stuff or photos or videos to go back and look at. But back then I wasn't starting a business, so I didn't really document much of it.
Oh yeah, that's cool to think about. And now the things you're documenting now, like where even you're at, warehouse office situation, you have more documents of that. So as you grow, you can look back and be like, oh, X, Y, and Z was so different, and if only I'd known. So I appreciate that you've got this excited mentality about it. And I'm even the same with my podcast, and then I have to ask you about yours. But when I first started, my whole thing is each week I have a different guest. And the first 2 weeks were friends from school who are sports people. And I was nervous to ask them because I didn't want to seem uncool, but also I knew that they'd probably say yes because they were friends. And then the first person who said yes was Dylan Schmidt, the trampoliner, and he didn't know me for a grain of salt. And he said yes, which gave me a whole new confidence in a different way, because I was like, oh, this person who has no idea, and there's not even a podcast at this stage, I was just trying to accumulate. So I was naive to, now I'd be like, oh, I should have maybe been a bit more formal. But it taught me something at the time of, yeah, it's like, you just DM, like I just DM'd you on Instagram, and people are a lot more responsive than you think, because you have that naivety, you just ask.
You just go for it.
Yeah.
What's the harm, right?
No, exactly. The worst thing is they say no.
No.
Or they just don't open it.
Yeah, fine, cool.
Okay, so then to segue off that, even though I didn't prep you for this, sorry, I just needed to know. So with the podcast, Board the Boss, I understand that you went through, from just reading, the ZM had like a ZM radio station, for those who aren't aware, it's in New Zealand, really popular New Zealand radio station, and iHeartRadio did a competition, for lack of a better word. Can you talk me through just like the high level of what that was like? Because then I want to ask about how you felt with the interview process. So first part is, can you talk through high level how the podcast even came to be?
Okay, so I was driving in my car and I heard the ad for ZM's next podcast star. And I remember thinking, oh, that sounds kind of cool, but like, I don't have the time, or like, why would anyone want to listen to me type thing. And I think I just like then shut it out of my head. And then one Friday night I was sitting at home and I'd had like two or three gins, and I obviously applied, naively gained some confidence and went, screw it. Like, I'll just put my pitch forward. Couple weeks later, I got a email saying, congrats, you are like one of our top 10 or finalists for this. And I was like, oh, for what? Like, we didn't apply for anything.
You didn't remember. Well, it was just, you did it and then you're moving because you're an entrepreneur. Right.
I just said like nothing's going to come from it. So I just kind of blocked it out. And then from there, we had to do kind of like a mood board of how we feel the podcast would look and how we think it would work. So I kind of did it more as a business pitch. And I said, well, I've already got my audience from Board George. I've got my audience from Georgia Patton. We'd then have an audience from Board to Boss. And that'd all kind of work in a nice triangle. So I'd be getting audiences from ZM, and then I'd bring my already built audience to your platform as well.
Synergy, right? Yeah.
Exactly. So that's how I pitched them. And then I got another email saying that I'm top three. And I had to write three episodes worth of content without really locking anybody in. So I picked my first three guests, people that I just know from the industry, went on a 40-minute walk around the block and typed my episodes on my phone, because I still had in my head that nothing is going to come of it. I still just went, this isn't going to happen. Like, just, you know, typed away, sent it to them. And I remember I was sitting in the doctor's practice and I got a call from a random number, and it was a girl called Lucy, and she was like, congrats, you've won, you're our new podcast star. And I basically nearly cried. I was like, oh my God, like, so unexpected. I completely told myself that I, number one, didn't deserve it, or number two, like, just wouldn't win. But I think secretly I really did want it. And when I got it, I think all those emotions kind of came out, and I was like, wow, I really did want this. Like, as much as I told myself it wasn't going to happen, like, I really did want it.
You were protecting yourself still of this idea of, if it doesn't happen, it's okay, I didn't want it in the first place. And then when you got it, it was
exactly.
Like, exactly. No, I really
wanted it. It seems to be something that I do quite a lot, actually.
Really?
Try to convince myself it's not happening.
And then when it does happen, you're very pleasantly surprised.
Yeah.
That is amazing. And so I'm also thinking, you've got so much on your plate with the business. Was there any sense of like, how the heck am I going to fit this in?
Yeah, definitely. I had hired a part-timer by that point, so that was kind of the only thing that made me feel comfortable with going ahead of it. From the day that I got it, I just started structuring my weeks around having half of a Tuesday free. And that's what I sent to ZM. I said, all the writing I can do at home, but I have half of a Tuesday to come into the office and do the recording and come back. So that's kind of how we worked it for the first, couple of months.
Well, perfect. I reckon, too, that in itself would have helped just bolster who you were and what the podcast was about, because it's not like you could just waltz in whenever. It's like, no, I have the business, I have this, this is when I can do it. And it's exactly what the Board to Boss is about, is like creating time for something and chasing those opportunities, because so many of your guests are exactly that, entrepreneurs who they didn't wake up one day and say, like, take Devin, for example, I'm going to have a full-fledged jewelry brand. It organically grows, and then you pivot and you upskill through hard or easy lessons. We learn how to improve ourselves. But with the actual interviewing part, because you're clearly a natural at doing it and a super easy guest to interview. Thank you.
Thanks.
But how has it been being on the interviewer side?
Yeah. I mean, it's been a lesson. I'd never done it before. The very first one I did was Devin, actually. So I picked her because we've been friends for nearly 10 years now. We had a really cool origin story of how we met. We actually met in the airport of Singapore on our way to do our OEs and then started businesses once we were back in New Zealand. So we've had a really good friendship, and I just wanted that first episode to be with somebody who I knew I could have good banter with. And then the second interview was actually just me. So it was just sharing my story, and that's when I really struggled. So that is not my strong point. Talking to camera without any questions or conversation is so hard. I do not know how radio hosts do it. And then I just started to get into the motion, and I feel like I got pretty good by the end, but it really did help to have guests that have really cool stories and also know how to bring honesty and all of this educational information to the podcast that honestly I learn so much from as well. So I'm really into the chats.
Yes, and you described it, I think, once in a message as one-on-one coaching sessions sometimes.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
You're having
I did it. Get some free sessions in, why not?
Yeah, and I just found it so impressive for a lot of reasons as an interviewer, as just a gal listening. But yeah, the coaching part, because sometimes I've had guests primarily, there's a few high performance psychologists or psychologists in general, and I think, okay, I'm going to go in and I'm going to be very professional and just interview them. And then I'm like, I've got time one-on-one with these people. I'm going to ask them some questions.
Like, why not?
They're so well-trained. And one time I think I said something, and Rod Corbin, who's a high performance sports psychologist, he called me out on it during the interview, and I was like, oh my gosh, you're so right. But it was great for the podcast too, because the listener could hear the very real moment. Yeah, but it's hard, as you said in the second episode, when you are just talking to no one.
It's so hard.
You're like, well, I've done one episode like that, and it took me 3 hours to do like a 30-minute piece, because I kept being like, what am I talking about? Start again, have a coughing fit, need a cup of tea. it was a rough one.
It was really hard. And yeah, I won't be running back to do those ones again, I don't think.
No, and I know you might not be able to say, but is there going to be like a season two? What's it looking like for the podcast?
You know as much as I do right now. I'm so used to getting things done the second I want things done, but we're working with other businesses on this one, so I just let them lead the way. I hope there is. It has made so much more of an impact than I ever could have imagined. So yeah, I think that'd be silly if they didn't, because there's so many people out there daily asking for where season two is.
Yeah, me included right now. So it's such a niche that it's carved, where it is very, to your point, practical business.
Yeah.
But then also just so cool to listen in and hear people like me. I'm not in that space, but to be able to be a fly on the wall and hear other people talk about it just helps sharpen my mind to a different way of being.
I think it's also because I listen to so many podcasts. And when I say so many, I probably listen to like 5 to 7 a day, whether that be like business or pop culture or something. But on the business ones, I found all the business stories that were brought on were usually people that ran multi-million dollar businesses, and they jump from the story of when they started to 5 years in, and they don't tell you about the nitty gritty on the inside. They just go straight from like, I was really struggling 1 year in, and now I'm in 100 stores and I'm in America and I'm a billionaire. Like, there was no realistic stories in there that I could like tangibly pull information from and implement in my business. And that's why I'm trying to keep it really niche with where we are at the moment and stick with businesses that are either under a mil, over a mil, or in that kind of like under 3 mil category, so that everything's kind of relatable.
Because otherwise it's too far out of reach that...
Exactly. It could be quite scary.
Yeah. And you just can't fathom like getting to that point? Because as you mentioned, it's jumping from year zero to year five.
Mm.
Even you within your business, because you're going to be, I'm checking the date on my watch, not the time. You're going to be, what, five?
We're going to be six next year, which is bizarre. Like, that's wild.
You have a six-year-old business.
I have a six-year-old business. Yeah.
Wow. Kudos again to 2019 Georgia, who made it happen so that now you made all those lessons and you've learned. And that tangible word you mentioned with the podcast, it's one of my favorite words when you talk about tangible advice, because it's all well and good telling people to just focus on the vision or do this, but
yeah,
you need to know, like, okay, yeah, I love the vision. Give me something I can actually do or execute, yeah, or an exercise that I can reflect on and get something out of, because otherwise it really just doesn't feel in touch with reality or someone else's reality. And then they might as well be a $5 million business.
Totally. I think another thing that I was hoping for, which we've kind of executed well in the podcast, was having people on that are, in quotation marks, public figures or well-known in social media for business. Because I think there's also a difference in listening to someone's story and not knowing their background or not knowing their business. But when you listen to them as a person and you already are aware of who they are and their business, so many times the messages that come through are like, I didn't know that about this person, or they have so much more depth to them, or like, crazy, they do this with three kids.
Yeah.
And it just gives them way more depth, and it gives you way more understanding of why they've done things a certain way.
Definitely. I think the first time I really experienced that was I had Jay Reeve on, who's a DJ host for the Rock Drive show. And I didn't know until I started researching him that he's also a co-founder in Pals. Like,
yes, I heard that surname and I was like, yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know where I'd been. I'd been in America. And so it wasn't until starting to research him that I was like, oh, wow, he also has this huge,
massive company.
Massive. And then listening back to that episode, he talks a lot about his wife, Anna, and the two other co-founders and their expertise there. But when I had initially reached out to him, it was only in the capacity of he's a
DJ,
Rock Drive host. And I thought that was incredible. And then add on top of that, everything he was doing with Pals. I just want to shout out him for a moment, because he is someone who we started the recording and we got probably like 40 something minutes in, and then a obligation with Pals came in, which is, you can imagine with business, it was like something needed to be done right now. And so we reconnected that same day when he was back in his home at like 10 p.m. when he had time to finish it off, which I was just like, the generosity of him to not only have given me so much time, we were almost done, but to say like, no, I'm really sorry, we need to finish this properly. And he gave me another like 30 or 40 minutes later, once he was done with his day, added on top of it. I just thought that shows his character.
Yeah, it's so cool, eh?
Yeah, that's a little story that I haven't told, but I just thought was really kind. Same with you, the generosity. So to pivot slightly, thinking about tangible advice, what did I write here? Okay. Please, Georgia, some advice for people wanting to start either an entrepreneurship endeavor or business or whatever it is. Some advice do you have for that person, but also for their family and friends, thinking about things you'd wish you'd heard maybe back in 2019. So a two-parter, one for the entrepreneur and one for the support people.
Okay, this is always a hard one, because you want to say something that they don't hear all the time. You know, there's the normal, like, just get started, or, you know, all those things that everybody expects to hear. So let's do something new. How about, I'll try a couple. Be okay with failing. Okay. So don't, like, dwell on the failures. So when you fail, just, like, have a little cry, and then, you know, half an hour later, just get back up and try again or try something new. Because if you do dwell, you're not only going to waste time, but you're probably not going to be resilient enough to keep going if the little things are getting you down.
Okay, I love that one just there, because the thing with failing too is it does suck. And the part that you said about crying is necessary. Yeah. It's so easy to go, yeah, so I struggled, but now I'm great and here I am. It's like, no, I struggled and it actually really hurt my feelings and I questioned my feelings and everything. And I had that cry, I had my moment, but then I got back on the horse and tried again. And you hopefully won't make those mistakes again.
You will. That's the thing. Like, you will.
Really? Like, you'll make it in some variation. Like, I even think, relating back to my experience with the podcast, is there are times where I've gotten off an episode and I'm like, I didn't have the right energy going into it. And now I know, but it has still, to your point, happens multiple times. If I'm not in a good headspace, the guest is going to receive that energy and it's going to be hard. So I have to reflect and be like, all right, let's make sure we have an appropriate enough setup, make sure I'm not tired. I did a couple episodes where I'd wake up really early in the morning to try and deal with time zones. And that just wasn't it, because no one can wake up and then be ready to be in it.
God, no, not a morning person.
No. So I like that. I think that's great advice for the entrepreneur themselves. But then what about for that, the friends, family, support people? What is something, a piece of advice you could give them?
There's so much on that end that you just feel so unequipped for. The family and friends have to understand that the business isn't just a business. The business is now your life. Every cent you have has gone into this business. So if it fails, you're kind of left with nothing. So when you start that business, or when your friend starts that business, just understand that it's the only thing running through their mind always. Whether you're at dinner, if they're trying their best not to check their phone, then they really are trying their best. But every little thing that's happening throughout the day is whether they get paid or not, or whether their employee gets paid or not. Like, the stakes, I don't want to say the stakes are high, because obviously there's way more important things
but they are
in the world. But I mean, we've been through weeks and weeks and weeks where I haven't been able to pay myself, and that stress weighs heavy. Yeah, it's just having that understanding, but then also being able to say, hey, you're not at work. Let's have an hour with a wine and a chat. Put your phone away. That also helps a lot.
Yeah, I like that. It's context too, because there are times where, for example, it's the 16th of December and you're in full ramp mode where you don't really have an hour, although thank you for making one for me, but you don't have that hour. But then when you do, having the support system there, I think that's a really nice call out that applies not just to business, but to things in general. If someone's studying, if they're an athlete, if they're maybe, I don't know, have a new baby or something like that, it's like appreciating that people are a bit all consumed in that moment. And then being there ready for when they emerge from whatever hole they've been in.
I think another good way to look at it, this is something me and my partner say all the time, is in the first couple of years, if not, like, we're still 5 years in and all my friends are on better salaries than I am. Like, and that leads me to the saying that Jay and I always say is, he's the short-term plan, I'm the long-term plan. And that's how we look at the business. He funds our life up until the point where the business starts being extremely profitable, or we sell, or whatever we want to do with it. Board George is the long-term plan, and that's the way you have to look.
I enjoy that a lot. A saying that I have with my boyfriend is, I'm like, you know, there's conditioning. So if someone's an athlete, there's conditioning, which is your training every day. Mm-hmm. You're preparing, you're making sure you're ready to go. I'm the conditioning and he is the game day. So I'll be preparing, like, I all of done, like, thought about the weather, this and that, I've prepared for everything, I've conditioned, and then he turns up on game day and brings the energy. And so I like that you have that phrase of the short term versus long term. There's that yin and yang, which
exactly.
Okay, I have one more serious question before sign off one, which is a bit silly, but and the caveat is, I know that this will change, so this is a very static answer to a dynamic question, but when you think about high performance, which is what you are, there are so many different ways to look at it, and it's different if you're in sports or business. So for you, how do you define high performance?
That's a really hard one. I mean, I did sport as well, so I straight away, when I think of high performance, I think of sport. Maybe driven, I think, is a word that would go next to it, and always striving for more is probably two things I would say with high performance. I don't know if I would still call myself high performance now. In my head, it doesn't equate to, like, business and educating, but I guess it does when I think about it.
So I have to jump in and, like,
no,
not correct you, but be like, Georgia, it does, because I think especially in New Zealand, we're so conditioned to think that high performance is sport because we call it high performance sport.
Yeah.
But what you're doing with your business and the way that you even just navigate your own schedule, that is high performing. And that's what I really want to push with this podcast, is high performance might not look and sound as we've been conditioned to think of it as, but what you're doing with your business is high performance.
Thank you.
Of course. And that's why I'm like, you've got to know this, okay?
I'm getting better at it. Like year on year, I'm getting a little bit better at being like, yes, I am. Thank you. Like I'll take that win and I'll run with it. So yeah, I'd probably say that, but I would say part of that comes from just my brain being busy. Like I have such a busy, busy brain. I can never just sit on the couch and be still. I always have to be doing something or learning something. And it is a blessing and a curse.
And today I'm going to take a flight back to the States, and I'm almost excited that you're forced for like 16 hours. There are sometimes Wi-Fi, which I'm honestly not about. I like this idea that you have to get on the plane and do
Watch
nothing.
movies.
Yeah, watch movies, order a Milo, just enjoy being. So I'm looking forward to that today. Georgia, time flies. So my last question is coming, but before that, is there anything, and I know that there's probably a lot, but is there anything I didn't ask you during this interview that I should have?
Not that I can think of. We've covered quite a bit.
We
You've
really
done
have.
such a good job.
Thank you. I like to leave that open because I'm so focused on my questions and what I'm doing that you could be sitting there like, Grace, we're on a sitter of a question right there. But no, that is
No, you've
wonderful.
covered it.
Thank you. Okay, sign off question. If you had to listen to just one musical artist for the rest of your life, who's it going to be?
I'm so boring. I'm such a basic. I was gonna say a swear word. Taylor Swift, of course. Like, come on.
You're with Swiftie. I have like her hoodie somewhere. Okay, now we've unlocked something. You're the first person who said Taylor Swift to me, and I've just been
I would
waiting.
love to, I go through waves of like favorite artists, but if I just think to like being in my car on like a 3 hour road trip, it's always the Taylor Swift Taylor's Version playlist.
Do we have, I could not say a favorite song because that's an impossible feat, but do you have like a go-to album of Taylor Swift?
She's always been my favorite, but I don't listen to it so that I don't give Scooter Braun the royalties.
We
So when she
need Taylor
releases her own
Swift.
version, I will be slamming that album. Although I have rediscovered Red lately, and I know, I would never have said that's a favorite, but after listening to it, I'm like, this has some bangers on it.
And that's the gift of Taylor Swift, right? Is you're preaching to the choir here. You can go through, like I'm on a 1989 Taylor's version, of course, jam right now, and then I'll swap and I'll go through and I'm just waiting for her to drop Taylor's version of Reputation because same as you,
Same.
I don't want to be supporting Scooter, but I also really love those songs.
Same. The 10-minute version of All Too Well, I think, is my like favorite ever song.
It just hits in such a different way. She's,
Oh.
we think of a businesswoman too. That's an example right there.
She never stops. I hope she's like has a break after the Eras tour and just chills for a year.
Yeah, but same as you, she'll chill and then she won't.
Yeah. She'll get 3 days in and be like, I'm bored.
Yeah, okay, that was great. Georgia, thank you so much. In the midst of crazy busy holiday season, your generosity is just exampled here that you've given time to me. So thanks for being on Tall Poppy Talk and just having a yarn.
No, thank you so much for having me. It's been such a good chat.
Thank you so much for listening to Tall Poppy Talk. We'll see you next time. Feel free to check us out on socials.